So the section of Nedarim, I apologize for my voice being a little bit hoarse, and I'm in the car, so I hope it comes through. The air conditioning is on, maybe let me turn it down a little bit. I'm traveling a lot during the summer, giving shiur in different locations, so I apologize. I hope that it's a little bit clear. So this is the parsha of Nedarim. It's a very peculiar way to discuss Nedarim. The parsha in Matos describes primarily the laws of Hafaras Nedarim, whereby a father or a husband can unilaterally annul the oaths, the shavuos, and the Nedarim of their daughter or wife, respectively. But this is, for whatever reason, which I'm not going to discuss now, the Torah's chance to articulate the laws of Nedarim. There are a few references here or there. Kachal Yazmi Pivyasa. Obviously, we learn some of the laws of Nedarim in the Zeros and the Psukim in Parshas Naso, describing a Nazir. But most of the Maseches Nedarim is derived from Parshas Matos. And the introduction to Parshas Matos is very irregular, where Moshe Rabbeinu speaks directly to the Rashi HaMatos. Now, what makes it irregular is two aspects. Number one, that Moshe didn't speak to Am Yisrael. Why does Moshe deliver this directly to the Rashi HaMatos? And then, secondarily, to Am Yisrael. What's also even more strikingly irregular is that Hashem doesn't command Moshe. It's not Vaydabar Hashem and Moshe Lemar. So Rav Amital spoke primarily about the second irregularity, but much of what he had to say also explains the first irregularity. Rav Amital felt that Moshe's delivering of the Nedarim, the laws of Nedarim, was in response to the Nesiim requesting, suggesting Nedarim and Shavuos. Why were they suggesting? What was the setting? Excuse me. After the collapse and the breakdown of Peor, the frailty of the human condition, vulnerability, sexual lust, weakness of human spirit, were all pretty evident to the Nesiim. And the Nesiim were searching, along with Moshe, for a remedy. How can we strengthen? How can we bolster? How can we protect human beings from similar failures? So they suggested that the notion of human beings creating stringencies and chumros and extra isurim and distancing from any shape, thought, or trace of Avera was a wise idea. So they approached Moshe with this suggestion. They endorsed the notion of Nedarim. They endorsed the notion of Shavuos. And Moshe, in response, delivers the laws. Now, of course, there's no free agency here. Moshe's not going to concoct the halachos. It all comes from Har Sinai. Whether Moshe had already been given the concepts and the Nesiim just wanted to reinforce them, and Moshe reinforced them by reframing them, and for whatever reason, the Torah records this response of Moshe as opposed to just embedding it in some other section of the Torah, some other direct narrative from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe. Whether HaKadosh Baruch Hu intentionally waited and wanted the Nesiim to initiate, like he did with Minot Zelevchad, where the laws of Yerusha were in response to human initiative, those are all interesting questions. Obviously, Moshe doesn't make up anything on his own, and that's why the end of the section ratifies Eilech Hukim Moshe Tziv Hashem is Moshe. There's no free agency, there's no personal authorship here. But Moshe is responding to a legitimate need sensed by leaders who are traumatized by the nightmare scenes of sexual frivolity, paganism, of general human weakness, and looking for solutions. And indeed, chumras do provide solutions. And indeed, chumra is a hallowed aspect of human experience, of religious experience, of Avodas Hashem. Chumras strike all the way back to the Torah. There are chumras in the Torah, Chazal, and very early chumras that are so early and so institutionalized by now that we barely discern that they're chumras. And I spent a lot of time discussing the value of a well-placed, authentic, sincerely adopted chumra. And even though most of Rav Amital's conversation at this moment was about the dangers of chumra, I don't want this year to feel lopsided as if I'm merely delineating the flaws and potential hazards of chumra. There are plenty of shiurim that I've given that are all online. They can be searched by using the word chumra or the tagline of chumra. But for whatever reason, on Parshas Matos, when he gave the shiur, Rav Amital focused us more on the dangers of misapplied chumras. And he listed three or four of them. I don't want to share them. Again, Rav Amital's style was not as categorical. Rav Lichtenstein would develop an idea, introduce it, summarize it, frame it, conclude it, and then move to the next idea. He had a clear sense of distinction, of distinct ideas being outlaid. Rav Amichai was much more stream of consciousness, and many ideas came forth in his sichot, and the divisions between them, the demarcations, weren't clear, so to a degree I'm reformatting them and also elaborating on some of the issues that he did elaborate on. So this is based on Rav Amichai's sicha, but if you read the sicha, you would not see it outlaid in the manner that you're listening to this year. Part of what Rav Amichai talked about is, are you maximizing the baseline of halacha? Instead of running to chumras as a vehicle for expressing your vigor, your discipline, your religious commitment, your devotion, look to the basics, look to the bread and butter, look to midos, benatim l'chavero, mitzvos, day-to-day, temidim, kil chasam, day-to-day, avodas Hashem. And Rav Amichai would always quote to us, the Rambam talks about is based on the Gemara in Tainus, and if you take an eder, even if you fulfill it, it's like you built a bama. And the bama analogy suggests or implies that instead of maximizing through the primary vehicle of interface between yourself and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Beis HaMikdash, as Hashem intended it, you're running off to Chumras. Of course, by running off to Chumras, you're emptying or you're deflating the potential of mitzvah. So if all your energies are poured into Chumras, sometimes it comes at the cost of baseline halacha, and not just the performance of baseline halacha, that can come at that cost as well. Sometimes Chumrah distorts the boundaries between halacha and between Chumrah, and it erodes or cheapens the sanctity of halacha. This is me speaking, not Rav Amichai. If something is aser, it's aser. If something isn't aser, you should never use the word aser, because then you cheapen the word aser. When the word aser is used, it should strike fear. It should create a barrier that's impassable. Chumras are meant to be flexed. Chumras are meant to be suspended from time to time, from context to context. You should never confuse the chumra with the baseline halacha. But even if adaptation of chumras won't cause the non-adherence to halacha, it can certainly recalibrate the amount of emotional investment, the amount of personal engagement in the basics, because the chumra seems so exotic, so different, unlike everyone else. Rav Amichai also spoke about underconfidence in religion, and I think that this is probably one of the characteristic features of Rav Amichai's voice of Avodas Hashem. It was a voice of confidence. It was a voice of capability. And so often, rightfully so, the voices that we feel when we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu are inadequate, as we should be, underconfident. Maybe that's a little bit dangerous. And I remember for myself, as a teenager, I was underconfident in Avodas Hashem. And instead of someone perpetuating that underconfidence and offering me, well, just follow the rules and make sure you cross the T's and dot the I's and make sure you're fully, fully adherent, which can lead to sometimes neurosis in religion, which we'll speak about a bit later, Rav Amichai gave us the confidence that, you know, we could do this. Wait, this is not too large for us. And very often, chumras are an expression of fear, guilt, underconfidence, inferiority, insecurity. And instead of dealing with those issues and finding a way to reconcile them with religion in many different ways, if you feed the monster, my terms, if you constantly feed your inferiority and feed your insecurity, and what more can I do, and to make sure I'm really doing it right, and, well, it becomes addictive. And we've seen people who constantly recite Kriya Shema, and their OCD about religion, orthodox compulsive disorder, and they're constantly saying brachos and constantly washing their hands. And as an educator, I deal with this issue fairly frequently in 18-year-old boys. There's nothing to get panicked about, but it's certainly something that can derail many people's religious equilibrium, derail their religious health. So chumrah can be both an expression of fear and underconfidence and guilt, and by indulging in it, you're just feeding it. You're just creating greater addiction, creating greater appetite for fear and guilt, rather than trying to stem it. It's contagious. Another thing Rav Amichai spoke about is there's certain arrogance, and I won't just call it arrogance, but inauthenticity of acting beyond your level in Avodas Hashem. There's not just arrogance in the normal fields of arrogant behavior. Rav Amichai, who's always giving us a keyhole to past generations, we always feel as if our generation, it's called generationism. Part of generationism is we feel that everything we're experiencing must have been true in previous generations. And when we have people either of experience, because they lived through it personally, or of historical sweep, because they've read about it, they're able to step outside, think outside of the box, provide some perspective. It wasn't always this way. Doesn't mean we should suspend our behavior, but it frames it, helps us understand it better, apply it more equitably, more proportionally. So, Rav Amichai spoke about previous generations in which we hear of the chumras of the Chazanish, or hear of the chumras of the Briska Rav, and be very inspired by them. Wow, this is an incredible commitment. But today, when we hear those chumras, it just becomes a green light for a personal adaptation. And really, two things are missing. The Ramchal didn't elaborate. First of all, it's harder to be inspired because we just mimic, and we feel that it's a recipe for the common man and for every man, rather than saying, well, these are great people, and let's be inspired by their behavior, even though specifically because we're incapable of reaching it. But more troubling is we're not those gedolim, and the behavior that's appropriate for them may not be appropriate for us, and we're acting out of our league. And it goes back to the most famous quote-unquote chumrah, which would be offensive if taken by anyone other than Moshe. Moshe was machmir, so to speak, to separate from his wife Tzipora, because he had to be in a constant state of preparedness and readiness to receive the Dvar Hashem. If any of us would separate from our wives because, oh, we need to be in a constant state of preparedness at Dvar Hashem, it would be abhorrent. It would be monstrous. You're not Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem doesn't speak to you that way. It would be delusional, even. And obviously, that's an extreme version of the delusional nature of chumras. But it's also true about more moderate and temperate chumras. Rav Amital's famous story, there's different versions of the story. I'll tell the version that appears in the Sefer Kol Yehuda on Parshas Matos, about someone who got into the car, and Rav Amital, evidently, he was a little bit playful, a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for, played the mischievous role. So he said, I bet you your tzitzis are bigger than my tzitzis. He turned to this boy who got into a tramp with him, and evidently, the way the story appears, it looks like they actually pulled out their tzitzis and started measuring, which to me seems unimaginable, but it seems like it happened. And indeed, Rav Amital's tzitzis were smaller than this person's tzitzis. And the point was that Rav Amital, I heard the story a little bit differently, that a boy stepped into a car with Rav Amital and a tramp and said, shouldn't I be wearing wool tzitzis? Because the Shulchan Aruch says the Yerei Shemayim should wear wool tzitzis, as opposed to cotton tzitzis. Cotton meaning the fabric, not the strings. The strings are always wool. And Rav Amital said, you're reading the Shulchan Aruch different from the way I'm reading it. You're reading it that a Yerei Shemayim, you can become a Yerei Shemayim by wearing wool tzitzis. Whereas I'm reading it, if you are a Yerei Shemayim and you want to express that status, that stature, then one of the ways to express it is by being machmir on one halach of tzitzis. And there are many, many layers to that story, but the layer that I'm discussing now is it's arrogance and cockiness and showmanship and ostentatiousness, and there's nothing more offensive than exhibitionism in religion. Either showing it off or even not showing it off, or just acting in a way that's beyond your stature, your station in Avodas Hashem. And chumrah is like this quick rise to the top, this accelerated catapult to a higher level. It may not reflect where we are. So it's not just the depletion or the depleting of emotional investment in the basics. It's not just the underconfidence that you're feeding and the guilt that you're feeding, but it's also the arrogance of acting beyond. I think he talks a little bit about this, not that much, but people looking for creativity, individualization, personalization, where their Avodas Hashem can be different from others, and a chumrah is a great way to personalize your accessory, you're different, you're machmir, or such. And Rav Amital was actually pretty, in this sikha, pretty sympathetic to that. There is a need, because in general he spoke a lot about individualism in Avodas Hashem, and I think I probably gave a share about this, he probably searched for that share as well. But he felt that chumrah as a method of individualization and as a method of personalization wasn't advisable. Again, he didn't tweak it as much. We didn't elaborate it as much, but it's just certainly something that's latent in the article. And then finally, which I think is an idea that resurfaces throughout the article, is not just the guilt and the underconfidence, but it creates stress in the fabric of Avodas Hashem, where there's just so many details that I spoke about before about the guilt and the underconfidence. And fulfilling chumras is an artificial way, but an unhealthy way, of dealing with guilt, underconfidence, inferiority. To know, well, I'm doing more than I have to do, and I'm fulfilling everything that I have to fulfill. And you think that you are satiating your underconfidence and your insecurity, when in effect it's an endless slippery slope, and you're merely feeding the beast and instigating or provoking more insecurity. But Rav Amital spoke also just about the stress level that you're converting religion into a neurotic checklist. How much am I performing? Am I getting everything right? And I deal with this a lot with Talmidim. And it's a delicate issue. You have to be careful. The cornerstone of Avodas Hashem, the cornerstone of religious experience, is fulfillment of the mitzvahs. We don't balk at that. We don't trivialize that. We don't say, oh, don't take it seriously. Take it as seriously as possible. And as feasible, we try to, and not just as feasible, we try to transcend whatever level we're reaching to make sure we're keeping as much of halacha as we possibly can. But the moment that that becomes our modality, and it becomes our controlling orientation, I call it the following syndrome, quote unquote, what am I doing wrong and how quickly can I stop doing it syndrome. I see a lot of boys when they become serious about religion, that's the easiest and most concrete way to define their religious identity, to take their religious temperature. What am I doing wrong? How quickly can I do it right? And it converts Avodas Hashem for what it's meant to be, a glorious relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that empowers man to maximize his potential, into this stressed, neurotic, worried state of heaviness and onerous, and I'm carrying this weight, but I have to carry the weight. It's a difficult weight to carry. And Rav Amital and the Sicha elaborated a little bit about how Slabodka tried to transform religion from religion of stress and religion of worry and religion of neurosis into a religion of grandeur and potential and self-empowerment. He actually quoted from the Alta of Slabodka, which I've given a lot of shiur more and I feel very close to. Unfortunately, so many of his writings are not available. He actually quoted from one of the Sichot about Ma'aser Sheni, where the Torah says, you're bringing Ma'aser Sheni, and there's happiness and celebration and jubilation. Leman Tilmad, the Yiras Hashem Elokecha Kol Yamin. And the Alta of Slabodka, doesn't see Fikel, elaborates, you think that where there's joy, there can't be trepidation. With trepidation, there can't be joy. And Ma'aser Sheni, being that it's, of course, a celebration and a simcha of agricultural success, that's obvious, that's latent. The Torah says, Leman Tilmad, Yiras Hashem Elokecha, that Yiras Hashem and trepidation doesn't have to be trembling and fear and insignificance and fright and trauma and darkness and gloominess. It could just be the joy of locking into a relationship with a being that's larger than you and knowing that you'll never understand that being's motives or that being's wisdoms. When you submit to that being's will, and that submission is called Yiras Hashem, but it isn't an act that's hatched out of inadequacy or insignificance or self-annihilation. It's hatched out of grandeur and celebration and joy that you have that relationship of something other than yourself, something beyond yourself that you submit to, in my words. So that was the final, I think this was probably the dominant part of the Sicha, that Chumras have a way of transforming religion into neurosis, heaviness, burden, grief, gloom, sadness, darkness, worry, as opposed to emphasizing the relationship with Hashem. Just think about your own relationships with Hashem. Would you be machmir in your relationship with your wife? Would you be machmir? You obviously have responsibilities to your spouse. You have responsibilities to your children. You have responsibilities to your co-workers. You have responsibilities to everyone you have a relationship with. But those responsibilities are preconditional and what's the word I'm looking for? Infrastructure. But the relationship is the relationship. The love, the friendship, the pathos, whatever relationship you're enjoying, and to just deconstruct the relationship into a list of do's and don'ts, and the relationship begins to wither, or the relationship is suddenly obscured by this relentless neurosis and worry where the details are being fulfilled. It's a very, very delicate issue. I don't want to simplify the issue. I certainly don't want anyone listening to this year to take this as, well, religion is just a relationship, and it's a conversation, it's a dialogue with Hashem, and of course, Hashem has expectations, but those expectations are just very loose expressions of Hashem's will, chalila b'chas. But there is a thin line, and that's a thin line that everyone has to be very, very careful to adapt, to adopt, to try to calibrate between punctilious, careful, meticulous performance of mitzvahs, but not to let that tone become the baseline of the relationship. And chumrah sometimes upset the calibration. So I hope this comes out clear, and I apologize if it didn't.